Green. Green is good. Green is good.
So rusty. Thank you. That's a completely unnecessary, but we'll take it. I was just saying, we're sorry about the display stuff. We're a little bit rusty. We haven't spoken since about 2018 when we did the package management DevRim, which I think you've been smashed into doing next time.
Next year, package management DevRim is coming back to Foster.
Did I just dump you in that?
Yes.
You can punch me later. So thank you all for coming. I appreciate it. It's a really long event, and this is the last session of a very long event, and that I'm standing between you and most likely a beer. Thank you for listening. And thank you all to those of you who don't speak English as your first language. I have a tendency to talk too quickly. This is the last session. It's likely that we'll overrun and that there will be Q&A at the end, for which we have plenty of time. So if I'm talking too quickly, just put your hand up and I'll start talking a little less quickly. Thank you for coming and seeing us.
And the other one.
Oh, God. Really? Okay, so... I did write a bit in this, but it's a bit silly. It says, I kind of feel like Elton John closing down Glastonbury, which is basically just a way of introducing who we are and where we're from. So Andrew lives about 10 minutes away from Glastonbury, the world's biggest festival, and I live 10 minutes away from nowhere, because I'm in the middle of nowhere in Shropshire. We've been working on open source for about 10 years, all started with Heartbleed. And Meredith Whittaker and Ben Laurie, who pulled me into some conversations about where the next Heartbleed comes. And I met Andrew, I think I was talking at a thing, and you were building a system called, at the time, was it called Libraries? I think it was,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was about being able to point people at good open source projects to kind of contribute to. Years later, you know, we've worked on very many projects. Most recently, working on ecosystems, which we'll talk a little bit about, but this, you know, it's not a sales pitch or anything. We kind of have to in order to get the talk done. We've been working for 10 years together, and we got dogs. So on the left is Leo, and on the right is Mabel. I've got one dog, you don't. You have, is that Luna or Felix?
That's Felix.
That's Felix. That's Blossom, the Wookiee. and that's Luna.
The latest edition.
Yeah. So I just have the one dog, Andrew's got four. So our talk is labelled, I'm not afraid of a bit of clickbait, I'm very sorry, but I will defend it if necessary. But the honest fact is that we're treating this genuinely as a kind of research question. So after saying, you know, and working in this space for 10 years, are we any closer to saying that we are supporting our digital infrastructure? And we're going to treat this as kind of two hypotheses. The first part is going to look at what our opinion is, which is that usage is the best determinant of software criticality, which we hope to convince you of. We might not, but genuinely, you know, we're here to try and convince ourselves. We've already kind of convinced ourselves, but that's that. And then part two, if you assume that that is true, we believe that most funding that we see, and there's a very specific word in there, is being misdirected. It is not being, it's not used to fund critical infrastructure. It's going elsewhere. So, what methods do we have at the moment? This is looking at the first part. So, is usage the best determinant of a critical kind of open source project? What methods do we currently use for identifying critical infrastructure, both within an organization and within the broader landscape? And we've come up with basically two methods that we see in the world, which we're characterizing thusly. The first is the divining rod method, in which one person at an organization, company, or maybe an individual basically decides what's critical, decides what's, you know, important in the world, just kind of looks using the cross sticks and says that that's that. Or we do the same thing, but we have a group of people in the organization, which we call the Ouija board method, in which you all place a hand on the Ouija board and one of us is pushing a little bit more than the other. And we end up, yes, towards your own projects. I'm not going to say the name that you want to say. But, I believe that we can do better. And I believe that evidence-based methods, because, you know, ultimately we both come from a mathematical background in robotics and computer security, the evidence-based methods are going to be the way in which we can do this. I'm going to make a point about that, but what evidence-based methods can we access currently, and what do we see in the world? Well, we see things like PopCon, the popularity contest for Debian packages that basically just takes a log of who is downloading and using packages in the Debian ecosystem. We've got something similar in Homebrew, where they show you all the downloads that they've got. And Andrew once scared a room full of Rubyists, is that what they call them? In 2018, by doing the same in the, was it an NPM package or was it a Ruby package?
I put Google Analytics in my JavaScript packages so that I could get real-time install information and then just presented the real-time analytics page during a conference, which scared the life out of everyone in there because they didn't realize how closely you could watch all of that activity because posting school scripts of JavaScript packages let you do whatever you like.
And they were all in the one room.
They were all in the room, yeah.
Which was good fun. So we've got a bit of a close-up of the results there as well. Thank you very much. This is incredibly impractical. There are other things that we can do to gather data. So we have something that is effectively doing that, but on a larger kind of scale called SCARF, which is basically a gateway in front of your own kind of download URLs so that you gain access to that information, kind of taking ownership a little bit more. Or we can do the Linux Foundation's approach, which is aggregating data from Fossa, Sneak, etc. That is, you know, representing proprietary usage in an aggregate manner. And they can continue to do this. The Linux Foundation in 2022 published their mobilization strategy that said they want to create a data lake that companies can basically dump data into. And that was one of their kind of main streams of their report that was published just after their second, I think it was, meeting in the White House. So you know how all that goes. My argument is basically, regardless of how much information you think you can collect on proprietary usage of open source software, you are never going to be able to say that that's representative of the whole. You're never going to boil that ocean. I don't believe that that is the right approach to take. I think we can basically save ourselves some time by instead trying to gather all of the data that we can see, the observable data, be able to demonstrate a correlation to what is representative of overall usage, and then say that that correlation indicates a strong enough indication for us to say that what we can see in the real world leads us to believe of what, you know, is holds for all of usage of open source, which I'm at this point sure that Andrew can say a lot better than me with some data.
Yes. Now, we agreed before not to make me the quant of open source, but what we've ended up with is now I'm going to do the quant section of the talk.
Me, Ryan Gosling.
Yes. That was your plan all along, wasn't it? Okay, so to be able to use all the data that we have about open source to try and get a good picture of how people use it within both within open source projects and within closed source projects, to be able to try and say, here is a global representation of usage of open source, especially from kind of like a relative perspective, so you can say these projects are used more than these projects, which will help us define which projects are critical. What I have been working on is collecting and normalizing data from every different software ecosystem possible, and then mining the dependency data of every open source project that is available. So far, I have a database table in Postgres with 20 billion rows in it, and it's a little bit of a headache, but the value that you can get out of that, and that we will explain, is that we can use data from this open source usage to imply data about proprietary usage as well by looking at correlations with other measures that include proprietary usage of open source software. And hopefully that will give us a number of formulas and kind of statistics that give us confidence enough that we can draw those parallels without having to collect all open source usage within proprietary software across the whole world, and instead just use the data that is available and then kind of work just from that. So we actually are able to reproduce this data and share it, and other people can do the same thing.
And where we don't have the data for downloads and so on, we can infer it using the information that we do have, because we've shown strong correlation in other ecosystems.
So yes, we believe, hypothesis number one, we can work out what this usage figure is to be able to give us a picture of what are the most critical pieces of software. Let's have a look at some examples of kind of the approach that we've taken to suggest that open source usage is a good parallel for closed source usage, or at least good enough that we can work with that to then move forward. This is a graph of downloads of, this one is
packages,
PHP packages, some of the most used PHP packages. As you see, you can imagine this long tail of dots that ends up in 0,0 is pretty massive, but simplified just so that I could actually render this in a browser, because 5 million dots is too many dots for Chart.js.
I need to try that.
Yeah, well, so the other access that we have here is the number of open source repositories that depend on each one of these PHP packages. Looking at the correlation between downloads, which includes everyone who is using PHP packages in their proprietary software and their open source software, against just how many times they're declared as a dependency in an open source project. You can see this actually has quite a nice trend. And we can look and see at other ecosystems. This is the Rust ecosystem, and actually has an even stronger correlation. It's still a little bit hard to see here, but you can definitely see the trend. Luckily, we have maths that can actually quantify that in a very useful way. Pearson correlation coefficient of comparing the number of, this has been a long FOSDEM, the number of repos, open source repos that depend on these packages versus the number of downloads that those packages have received over all time. If the correlation is above 0.8, it's very, very strong. We can be confident that one will infer the other. If one is large, the other will be large, going down the scale, right? Let's have a look at some examples of what we measured in open source usage for a number of very large software ecosystem. So Rust and packages are incredibly correlated. Basically, if you know how many people in open source depend upon a PHP package or a Rust package, you can guess this is going to be a similar level relatively. Like, it's not going to give you an absolute number, but relatively it's going to be able to go, oh, I can infer this. This is really helpful because, as you notice, there isn't a Go row here. You can't get Go download figures. They're just not available. But we can measure dependent repo usage in open source of Go packages. If the correlation is strong, we can imply that this, we can kind of infer what the download stats would be if we had them. And people much smarter than us with a statistics background could do a lot more. I'm not really a quant, I'm a Ruby developer. We have all of this data that is available and public for people to build more interesting statistical models than I am able to do for a conference talk, to help us do really interesting insights into different ecosystems and across all of open source, potentially, to be able to like really build out strong models that imply what we believe, the correlation looks very strong, to give us a picture of what proprietary usage of open source is, even if we don't have that data. And we actually had a funding proposal that we put out. It was turned down, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to throw that shade? But no.
But if anyone isn't interested in funding that research, then do come and say hello.
Hey, cool. No worries. You can go to sleep soon. So having established that we believe... Sorry.
I've still got another section.
I know. You can tell we don't do this often, but we do work together a lot. Right, okay, so having proven, we believe, that you know there's a very strong correlation between observable usage, is what I'm saying, and kind of all usage of open source software, the next thing is that if you agree with that, can we demonstrate that funding for critical infrastructure is being misdirected? At which point, I have to obviously say no, don't I? Because the data that we do have, being predominantly from GitHub, GitHub sponsors, and Open Collective, is not specifically directed for projects on the basis of their criticality. So straight off the bat, I have to kind of say no, but we can run with it, and we can see where we get to. And we can see the funding that we do have available, that we can see, we can take a look at that, see where it's directed, see how well it matches up, and then we can talk a little bit about, you know, lack of data, effectively. There are plenty of other sources. I'm going to talk about them a little bit in a second, but I think now, basically, I have to sub you back in. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so let's have a look at some more graphs, and I kind of want to give an example of two different data sets and then see what happens when we smash them together. And it's a little bit of a car crash, but it should be fun. So this is a graph of all of the accounts that are on GitHub sponsors by the number of people and other accounts that have sponsored them. We don't have data for how much they gave. GitHub, we'd love that data. That would be great. But for now, we can use this as a proxy. It's a very nice graph. You might have seen other graphs like this. The kind of long tail of anything ends up looking very much like this, where there's one account at the end that has like more sponsors than absolutely everyone else, trailing off to these accounts all have like one or two sponsors ever. Again, we don't know exactly how much money ZigTools could have received, like absolute huge amounts of sponsorship, but we have to go with what we've got.
We know that, what was it, 68 million last year was given in sponsors?
Yeah, maybe. So...
Is that right? I can't remember. I think it was. Yeah, you laughed.
Abby's not going to answer that question right now. Legal told her to stay quiet. We also have very nice data from Open Collective. There's maybe 2,500 collectives in Open Source Collective. And again, very similar graph. I like this because, you know, we got two different data sources and the graph comes out looking kind of similar. That's encouraging. The area under this this line is approximately $50 million, which is cool, but also, like, you can't really see the line. I've actually cut this graph off because it goes over into, like, the next building. It's very, very long tail. What's interesting here is then, right, we have these funding stats for how much projects have received in total amount of dollars. And let's use Open Collective because we have dollars, not just number of sponsors. Let's look at all of the Rust packages that are on Open Collective and how much they have raised versus how much usage they have. I wouldn't pay too much attention to the axis here because the numbers in dollars are not $40 million that some of these Rust packages have raised, but I had to squish them to get them to show up, otherwise all the funding looks like nothing compared to the number of downloads. So it's relative, right? We have some interesting things. Some packages in Rust that are highly used and, you know, are on Open Collective are actually receiving a good amount of money. But there's also this kind of like, the most downloaded doesn't necessarily have the most dollars collected there. If we step through some other package managers and other ecosystems, you start to see everything goes a little bit wobbly and we start to lose our trends a little bit. The Python one has NumPy on here, but of course NumPy is actually under NumFocus Foundation and doesn't have very good data here at all, but NumFocus as a foundation, has a lot of money to be able to support that project. But we haven't mixed that in because it's really hard to discern exactly how much funding from foundations goes into individual projects. JavaScript is actually really popular on Open Collective. It's like one of the first communities to adopt that kind of open funding. It's absolutely all over the place. You notice a weird correlation with some of these bars as well, right? Where it's these are all Babel's projects, and they're broken up into small modules. How are you supposed to say, like, okay, well, Babel receives lots of money through Open Collective. Which one goes to which package? How can you then kind of align that? It's actually quite difficult to do, and how to square that is really painful. And then if you go to the Ruby ecosystem, you're like, oh no, what's happened here? We have almost no correlation between this funding data and the amount of usage of these projects. This is disastrous. I have no confidence in this graph whatsoever, but it's actually based on real world data, right? We just don't have good data to be able to have 10 minutes left. So the answer is inconclusive. We don't have enough data to be able to have any confidence in these graphs at all. We're like, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? But how do you know? We don't know is kind of the problem.
Thank you. It is tiny, unlike me. So as we said at the start of the section, look, you know, the data that we're looking at is not targeted at critical projects. We accept that. But even if you were to say that it was, the results are basically, you know, fudgy and not great. So, you know, going back to our original research question, after a decade of saying that we need to support our digital infrastructure, are we any closer to saying that we do? that's basically it. That's my presentation. But unfortunately, we've got a few more minutes, and you have to listen to me. So, what do we need? How are we going to address this? Martin did such a good job on this.
I love this design.
I know, so good. So there are a few things we need, and you know, I'm not saying I come up with all the best ideas, but what I am going to do is just amplify good ideas that other people have had at this point. Over a year ago, just about, I think it was a year and 2 weeks ago, Frank Nagel and a few others wrote this report on the value of open source software. It's got some interesting kind of figures thrown around about the demand side and supply side value of open source. I suggest that you read it, it's free. But I would like to shout him out because Frank said exactly what I'm gonna say, which is we need better data for financial support, both direct and indirect. So that's direct financial support and indirect financial support, which might be we're employing someone on 50% of their time at whatever rate that they're employing on to work on that particular project so that we can map what resources are available to whichever projects. Now, there are some people who are trying to do this. And I think Emmy did not manage to make their talk this morning because of a train. But shout out to IOI, so Invest in Open Infrastructure. They have been trying to map $400 million worth of funding, both at state and philanthropic institutional level, to a bunch of open infrastructure projects, which a lot of are open source projects. I'm not saying they're the same thing. Please don't shoot me, Caitlin. But yes, I would just like to give them a shout out and shout out to Emmy, who, yeah, I wish I could have heard your talk.
And spoiler alert on that. It's really hard and it's very, very manual to do right now. So
They've manually done that and there are very many issues, including how to map actual money that is going to the project versus being used in administration, the argument about whether that would actually count as support for a project anyway. It is super, super complex. And basically what we need is to agree on a way to describe these resources for this project that can be led from the project side or from the funder side. There are initiatives that have been spoken about. I think IOI maybe released a report earlier this week, or maybe it'll be coming next week, that says, hey, the 360 data giving data standard was proposed a while back. This is the method that we think we should use for describing how funding is being used and moving to these projects. I actually worked on a open contracting data standard in 2012 when I worked in civic tech with the World Bank that was deployed in 2014 to describe, I think it was most of New York State's spending. It's a similar kind of thing. And I'm not proposing another standard. I know the XKCD comic, no worries. I'm just saying that there are ways in which we can do this. And basically we need better information. If we had that information, what could we do with it? Do you want to take this bit? Or do you want me to?
Take this bit? Yeah. There's no maths in this bit.
So let's imagine a world where my graphs weren't terrible, but also we had enough data that you could be like, okay, they're really weird, but at least we can rely on them because like it was representative of actually where the money was flowing and where other kinds of support were flowing as well. Some measure of that all kind of fluffed together as well. That would potentially be able to give you a picture of where critical projects are under-resourced or over-resourced, and then when you come to make decisions about where should funding go to a project or where should resources go, you'd be able to make a data-driven analytical decision rather than using the Ouija board or using the divining rods to kind of just wave yourself around and land on whichever project happens to have a really easy way to donate to them. You'd actually be able to go, this is a critical project to my ecosystem that doesn't have enough support, and I can confidently give them support until they get to the point where they are no longer kind of underproduced. That term of, it's a Mako, Benjamin Mako's, had this concept of underproduction, which basically is like, these projects are really heavily used, but they're absolutely crushed under the weight of the pressure of open source. We can recognize that, and we can give them more support so that they can stand up the project to make it much more stronger and sustainable, which then has a knock-on effect of, you know, improving everything in its ecosystem and kind of being able to scale that up to do support for the whole world of open source, because the whole world runs on open source now.
Thank you. That was very smooth. So in addition to that, I just want to say, you know, we start with the research question, like, can we say that we're supporting and sustaining all of open source? I'm not saying that finance is the be-all and end-all of open source. I'm saying that it's a constituent component. We can probably represent some of the other implicit, implied, and, you know, kind of hidden kind of support for projects. But ultimately, what I want to do is be able to prove for ourselves that the thing that we've been working on, in our case for 10 years, is actually working. That would be lovely. If we could do that, thank you very much. It's not having a go at anyone. It's not, you know, throwing any shade or anything. But having spent the time that we've spent in this space, I would really, really like to be able to know that I had some sort of impact. Thank you. There's plenty more to come. We're going to continue working on this. I've managed somehow to intertwine a couple of organizations that I work at and director of so that we can do that. There's very many opportunities for us to work together with many of you out there. All of the data that we've just spoken about is freely available, as is all of the data on ecosystems. This is not a sales pitch. It is just an open call to say that we are more than happy to work with you on any of these subjects because we genuinely care about the space. So I think that is about it. And now we've got a bit of time for questions, if anyone has.
Let's remember to repeat the question.
Yes?
Yeah, wonderful talk. Thank you so much for it. I have a question, and I hope this fits under the bracket of more to come as opposed to Ouija board or divining rod. If we accept the premise that criticality is this kind of, is a better measure, usage is a better measure of criticality, can you extend that with sort of metrics or indicators that are on the project level? And by that I mean sort of indicators about sort of community or project health and sort of then correlate with usage.
Yeah, so we have opinions. I will repeat the question. So if we take it as a given, maybe that usage is a determinant of criticality, how might we include other scores and be able to maybe complement that data? So I will say from the first thing to get out of the way is that some measures appear to actively punish projects when you're looking at them for not having maybe a correctly formatted license file, or yes, I know that's another issue, but let's ignore that for a second, or you know, not having great documentation and so on. To which point, I think that is probably wrong. If you accept that your project is one of the most used in a particular ecosystem and likely used in industry as a result of that, which we've shown, why would you want to demote some sort of criticality score because they don't have certain documentation? It's still going to have an impact if it blows up. But yes, I think, you know, we're aware of the work of Chaos and the work of OpenSSF and so on in drilling down into how you might direct your efforts based on measures that you might see in how well the project is managing the demands that are placed upon it, right? So things like, you know, how well